back on Inside Black and Gold. This is a mailbag edition. We got a lot of comments in here, so we'll go through a good number of them quickly. First, Chris P. asks, why I'm making that face? I don't know. I wasn't paying attention to the comments when you asked. It's just my face. I don't know. Sometimes I make faces. It's what I do. But Jules DuPont says, car puns need to pump the brakes. I see what you did there. Also, I disagree. I think negative car puns need to pump the brakes. I'm tired of hearing the same bad jokes.
Used car, you got a lemon.
Oh, he's a lemon. You know, that's what I'm tired of. Let's get creative and come up with some positive car puns. That was my goal.
I did see someone calling car here a Camry, and there's nothing wrong with that. They're reliable.
Yes, is Will Hildebrand.
Okay.
He says, our car is a Toyota Camry, which I know you appreciate, Steve, because you drive like a 1994 Toyota Camry.
Yep,
it's like
exactly.
The oldest car I've ever seen that runs. He says, there's nothing wrong with that. Tough, dependable, and good enough. They do get to get you where you need to go. They're not gonna, no one's gonna take a sit, you know, gonna do a spit take, being like, wow, did you see that? You know. But they run forever, and you get some resale value out of them for sure. I agree. The car puns are a little overused, but again, we get so many negative ones. I think I need to balance the deck out at some point. KD, wow, this is stunning. He says, okay, car got a chuckle out of me. I think he was talking about the Bug Zapper line.
Yeah,
that's trying to grow on me. I hope he keeps playing good. And you know, and that's the thing. Like, I feel like everyone decided so early on that they just hate this guy. Like, he's irredeemable, and he can't possibly play well enough to like him, so we're just going to quit on him and wait for something to change. And I don't know. I think that he's a good enough quarterback to complement a good an elite defense, which I think the Saints have, and win a good number of football games. And guys, like, I get that there's this idea that, oh, you're mediocre, just going to the playoffs and seeing what happens is not what successful teams do. I disagree with that. Like, I think saying like, oh, winning 9 games and getting to the postseason can't be fun, that's bullshit. There's so many fan bases out there that would love nothing more than a 9-win season to get to the playoffs. Like, guys, I need you to understand, you know, at a certain point, you just got to get there and see what happens. Right. Cause you know, like, again, like, I grew up a Giants fan. You know how miserable I was so many of the years that I watched the Giants play? But you know how much fun I had the 2 years they went and beat the Patriots and years they had no business beating the Patriots? That's like the most, like, that's the most excited you could be, because there's no expectations. It's all gravy. And you're just, by the end of it, you're just like, stop, there's too much. I can't take anymore. And it's like, I think the Saints, like, Saints fans should be there right now. Like, we've hit the bottom of the, like, I feel like you've gotten to the point, you're at that kind of low point where it's like, okay, you can either really fall to the bottom, or you could, I don't know, surprise some people. And I think you should be excited about that. Either way, that's not what this comment is about. But I do think that there's a reality where we can start to get behind the quarterback of the Saints again. And obviously, if he comes back in week 2 and week 3 and plays, you know, like, I don't know, come up with your car pun, I'm not going to give you any more, then yeah, we can get mad again. But I'd like to think that if we continue. And here's the thing, like, you could say, oh, that's a one-off. You go back to last season, and I mean, the last month plus of the season, he was elite. And then you start the season like this.
Right. It's like, okay, we saw the carryover now from year 1 to year 2 on a positive note. So it's like, you should be feeling good about the quarterback. There's no reason to bash Carr, right?
Not right now. No, for sure. Not right now. And there will be reason to criticize a guy. There's always reason to criticize a guy. But I think a lot of it was like, hey, yeah, I watched what happened at the end of last season, but I don't believe it. I don't believe that he's going to come into this season and show anything that indicates, hey, maybe he can carry this over. Well, I mean, I think you at least have some reason for optimism in that regard. And I'm excited about it. Like, I don't like talking about a team that everyone's miserable about, you know?
Well, getting on to do our jobs then gets a little miserable too. It's like, crap, we got to talk about this again.
This stream has been a lot more fun than
absolutely.
It would have been otherwise. Rich Rising says, we not getting no national props for that ass whipping. And I haven't really been paying that much attention. I've been really like hyper focused locally, but I'm sure that's the case. I'm sure that
Kay Adams gives the Saints love, though.
Kay Adams, I don't know why she loves the Saints so much, but she does.
She does. She loves the city too, I know. So it's got to be a combination.
Yeah. And she likes Derek Carr. I think that's kind of where it is. It's like Derek Carr and Daniel Jones have become like the laughing stock of the NFL. And the difference is Daniel Jones deserves it. Daniel Jones is awful. And he was the number six pick in the draft. And the Giants, they're stuck with him. They paid him. They shouldn't have paid him. These are not the same. Like, this idea that these are the same guy is not true. And I think you can win with Derek Carr. I don't think you can win with Daniel Jones. And I think there's a difference
there. More
and
more, Carr's contract looks like a deal off the used car lot, if you would say.
Can't help yourself, can you? hey, look who we got. We got a look who it is. It's Tony from Australia.
Oh, good day, mate.
Good day, mate. he's listening from Melbourne. He says, "Who dat? What a sensational win by the Saints. Now to whoop those stinking cowgirls next round. What time is it in Melbourne? Let's see.
Time conversion.
It is 6 a.m. This man is listening to this podcast. When he left his comment was, 90 minutes ago.
So I wonder what a good Australian breakfast is.
So I don't know, but I imagine there's a kangaroo involved. That's, I appreciate you, Tony. Thanks for hanging out. Katie says, "I loved every second of Carr talking shit. When you walk, you could talk it." No, like that's the fun thing. Like, it's so funny because there was a point last year where that's a clip that if it got circulated, it would have been like, who does this guy think he is? You know, like there was a moment where Carr threw a touchdown pass against the Panthers and I came off the field celebrating and everyone was like, oh, look, he's acting like he just won a Super Bowl. And it's like, it's just funny because it's like, why wouldn't he be excited? He just threw a touchdown pass. But I think it's funny how quickly that narrative can change when you feel like things are going in the right direction. And suddenly Carr having an edge is a positive thing, yes, as opposed to a reason to clown the guy. And it was funny. But again, it's like when you're dating someone, all of those quirks are cute and endearing, and then you break up and it's the most annoying thing ever. That's how it feels. Like it's that in reverse.
It's right? Still, I mean, how great. I love seeing the personality, obviously, but he's like, dude, I just threw three touchdowns on you.
On you. Like, who are you talking to? And Derek did have some funny things to say. Like, you know, like these guys like to pretend they don't hear the boos and it's not something that resonates. And I'll be the first to tell you, they're full of shit. They heard those boos. Derek heard those boos against the Lions, and he actually referenced it in his comments. He was like, I haven't had a bad day in the Superdome other than that one time. and he was like, and even then it was like, hey, I started playing better, and the fans were like, oh yeah, okay, this is I like this.
What made it so contrastingly, you know, was obviously with Taysom coming onto the field and the cheers coming on, it was like, man, this is brutal.
Well, a lot of times you don't know exactly who's getting booed, right? Like a lot of times it's like, oh, you're struggling. They're booing kind of the idea and the offense isn't doing what they want. So they're going to yell. But you're not saying like, well, they're booing that guy. In that case, you knew exactly. There was 60,000 people in a building all telling you exactly how they felt because the scenario allowed it to be targeted. And, you know, to Derek's credit, he didn't fold. If that was me, I would have been like, okay, I would have gone nuclear like 33 times. Throughout the course of that season. He's a much more patient person than I am. But, you know, I appreciate how he responded to that. And kind of since that point, he's been a different quarterback. So I don't know, maybe they did bully him into being better. It's tough to say. It's tough to say for sure. But one thing he did mention as well, and I think is completely true, like if like when the fans are engaged and loud the way that they were on Sunday, it changes the dynamic in that building so much. Like, and I get it. If you don't like what's going on the field and you feel like, hey, this should change, this is not what I want, you're not going to be as loud. You're not going to be as invested. But like the fans are the reason that the Superdome is an advantage for the Saints. And when you see the other team having to call timeouts on third down and Bryce Young, like clearly not being able to hear the call in his own helmet, that changes the game for the better for the Saints. Like fan impact plays are a real thing. I'll never forget the NFC Championship game. That's the loudest I've ever heard it in that building. Although yesterday my Apple Watch was warning me that if I did not get out of there within 90 minutes, I would have like permanent hearing loss. It was like, oh, look at that.
Really? But, so that popped up on your watch. I had no idea that happened.
Yeah. Yeah. It, I mean, it's, It thinks I'm like listening to something really loud, but
no, that's pretty amusing.
It thinks I'm like standing next to a jet engine or something. But
yeah, right.
I'll never forget that game because I remember at halftime, Jared Goff came out and he had taped over his ear holes, so he could hear the mic in his own helmet. And there was a point during that game that the building was shaking, and the part of the concourse broke off and like fell to the ground. And I'm like, this building is so loud that I'm worried it might collapse. And it's impossible to kind of put into to quantify how much of an advantage that gives a team. But you like when it is the environment that it was on Sunday, and this is a close game that you can take control of,
your it changes head, man. It fucks with your head.
Changes everything. And so hopefully we get more environments like that. Like, again, like you're facing the Eagles in 2 weeks, right? Like, that's a game that, you know, when you say like, well, it's going to be a really tough to ask to go to Dallas and beat the Cowboys, beat a very good team in their house. You welcome the Eagles and suddenly you have that advantage. And that's why it used to be like, you know, like a death wish to walk into the Superdome and try to win a game in a big moment. And I remember like thinking, I remember when I lived up in Connecticut, the Giants had to play in the Superdome on a Monday night. And I just remember sitting there at a bar watching, thinking like, they don't have a chance. Like they're going to get run out of this building. And so hopefully it gets like that again. I hope it does. I hope we see a lot more of it. Robin Strugari, say what you want about the Panthers. They are a professional football team. A win like this is hard to come by. And right, like again, like, yeah, the Panthers are a bad football team. They're still one of the 32 NFL teams. And I don't care who you're playing. If you embarrass a team like you did on Sunday.
And that it was.
It's not about like, well, they're just not good. It's about like bad teams. If you're still sitting there saying, well, the Saints are bad too. Bad teams don't blow out other bad teams that way. Good teams blow out bad teams that way. Now, how good are the Saints? I still think they're probably middle of the pack, but I think that there's a chance that they are upper middle of the pack. I'm not going to put them in the conversation with the 49ers or these top, the elite teams in the NFL, but I do think that the idea that they were not in the middle and it was really just a question of where they stack up in the middle was always silly, because that's always been the case. And
although we'll obviously see from the 49ers tonight and what they end up looking like, because I haven't got to watch the highlights from the game, but I do have Joe Burrow on a fantasy football team, and PU.
Man, my fantasy, I won all three of my leagues, and I didn't draft any wide receivers high, and I went with guys like Nico Collins and Jaden Reed and Rashid Shaheed, and they all delivered. The only one I drafted high was Tyreek Hill in our league, and because he's a cheat code. Especially after he got arrested. I was like, bet all the overs. KD says, Alante or Lawrence Taylor?
your NFL, tied for NFL sack leader, Alante Taylor.
Here's another one. KD, I'm not ignoring everybody else. He just has a lot of good comments. He says, if Tyreek can get arrested right before a game, I can only imagine a cop stopping groupie. And he says, sir, I'm in a rush. I'm late for the game. I'm the Saints starting kicker. He's like, yeah, right. Hands behind your back. Probably
pretty wild scenario though in Miami for sure. I still don't understand the whole gravity of the situation.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird, but that's not what this podcast is about. Will Hildebrand says, I'm a groupie. Good to hear. Dre Day says, little guy with a huge leg. You know, the funny thing is like people are like, I don't understand how he kicks the ball so hard. When you watch him kick, appreciate that, like, so you watch a golfer, like watch a professional golfer, and how they're able to hit the ball so hard is not because they are really strong. It's the kind of pendulum effect of like they're able to get that club so far behind them that when they swing, they just have so much runway. And by the time the club gets to the ball, it's going insanely fast. And that's really what the secret is for Blake. Like, watch his leg. It's insane. It's like he's able to dislocate his hips almost. And the backswing of his leg is absurd. It's like his lower back, like halfway up his back. His leg is like way back here. And that's why he's able to get that distance and that power on the ball, because he just has such a backswing. And it's really remarkable. And I talked to Darren Rizzi about that last year, and it's like that's when you're scouting a guy, that's a lot of it. It's like, yeah, some guys have strong legs, but the reason they can't control it is because they have to put the power into the ball, and he just does it so smoothly that's why he's able to maintain that kind of trajectory so cleanly. And that's something that you really have to watch a guy and scout a guy to understand, because not all colleges understand how to teach kicking, right? Like Cade York, he just was a guy that could kick the ball forever. He gets to the NFL and just like, it's too erratic. Like he doesn't have that control the way he did in college, because you're asking him to do a lot more. But anyway, all right, let's get a couple more here. No more for KD. You've had enough. Will Hildebrand says, remember when everyone was worried about the safety position way back when? Two INTs, Honey Badger forced fumble, and he recovered it. Great game, but a real team coming up. Agreed.
Bryce not looking so hot, man. And there were some pretty open passes he should have made and didn't.
I think we need to do a welfare check on Dez.
Yes.
He had drank the Kool-Aid pretty hard.
Lots of it.
I'm worried about him. You might have a hangover. Someone spiked it. Okay. KD says, Steve, please stop. Riz is for the ladies. It's like spitting game. Yeah, exactly. That's why when you said it, I was like, I think you're using that out of context. Now, I don't want to, you know, like I'm not going to go on a limb here and say I am the arbiter of Gen Z, Gen Y, whatever it is, lingo. But I have heard Baby Gronk say it, and it's not the way you said it. So
gotcha.
We'll go from there. Lehman Park is here.
I just found out recently, like, swag is not cool to say anymore, though.
Probably not. Ooh, we got the Keeping It Real Who Dat Sports podcast. Haven't seen you guys in a while. Says, I believe Derek Carr played his best game as a New Orleans Saints quarterback. He was patient, in command, decisive with his throws, and his ball placement was excellent. Even the chief Derek Carr hater, Lehman Park, and I don't throw that title around lightly, but I do think that this person qualifies. He says, Derek Carr was an NFL quarterback and we won. Yeah.
Facts.
Right. And again, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Derek Carr is a top 10 QB, but I am going to tell you that Derek Carr is good enough to win with. And I am going to tell you that Kirk Cousins is not that much better than Derek Carr or Baker Mayfield for that matter. That's why those QB lists were nonsense, where you put Baker Mayfield like 15 spots ahead of Derek. It was just silly. And here's my thing, and this is something that it's hard to visualize. I need to get like a whiteboard and write it down. But you know what? Like everyone wants to talk about quarterbacks, and I know we're 90 minutes in this podcast that I'm not bringing this stupid shit up. But you know how everyone likes to talk about quarterbacks and say, like, okay, like you draw a line from left to right and say, this is the quality of a quarterback, and it's a straight line across the board. And so this is Derek Carr, this is Pat Mahomes, and this is this person, this is this person. In reality, when you're talking about quarterback play, it's like, you know what a Richter scale looks like? You know, like you'll get like this kind of wavy line, and sometimes it'll spike, and then sometimes it'll go low. That's really what you're talking about. Quarterbacks do not play at like this consistent static level. Sometimes Derek Carr is on a heater like he was yesterday, and he's at this kind of peak of his chart. Sometimes you get games like Minnesota, and that would be the bottom, the low point. But like, it's really just the average of that. And what I will say for Derek Carr is that some quarterbacks will have these incredibly high highs and these incredibly lows. With Derek, I think you have a guy who the baseline, like the bottom of that chart and the top of that chart, aren't that far apart from each other, right? And that's where I think you can work with, because you know what to expect. Like, he's not a guy who's going to turn the ball over. He's a guy you can trust to make the right decisions. Does he have the athleticism to extend plays? No, but you understand that. You don't have to worry about, okay, with this kind of volatility of, well, what if Lamar can extend this play for 25 minutes and then we can do something because guys run around and play schoolyard football. Like, you don't have to worry about that variable because Derek's not doing that. But I do think that he is above replacement level, which is like, okay, pick up any quarterback off the street and throw him in there, and this is how he's going to play. And you will have points where, okay, this guy's dealing right now, and you can go punch above your weight a little bit. And so I appreciate that. And I'm glad that he kind of showed that in this game.
I'm actually loving Lehman Park, Jeff. Okay, the preseason game against the Panthers is over. It's time for the regular season next week. Hey, you got a point. I got you. There's a point there, too. And I'm like, this is definitely another step up in the competition.
See, I don't look at it as the preseason. I kind of look at it like, okay, there's a reason LSU schedules Nicholls State.
Yes, exactly.
You know?
Right.
Like the Saints. But that's also like, I also get annoyed. It's like, why does LSU keep scheduling USC or Florida State before Nicholls State? Like, there's a reason you call it a tune-up game. And the LSU usually gets to that tune-up game one game too late.
Well, and the LSU tune-up didn't look so crafty either.
Yeah, it didn't look good. I think there's reason to be worried about the LSU's year. But either way, like, that's kind of like, I don't think it's like a preseason game. I kind of look at it more like a cupcake game, like where you pay that team $1 million to show up and get boat raced by 70.
Yeah, because it does count, obviously.
Like the Saints are gonna have to start paying the Panthers to show up if they keep beating them like that. Oh, man. J-Rock says, I didn't know Clint Kubiak was the OC for Mike Zimmer with the Vikings. The Saints may have a better chance to beat Dallas than I thought. And yeah, that is an interesting subplot that we haven't really gotten into.
Dun, dun, dun.
Clint Kubiak was Mike Zimmer's offensive coordinator when Mike Zimmer was the head coach of the Vikings. Mike Zimmer is now the defensive coordinator on Mike McCarthy's staff with the Cowboys. So there's an interesting connection. And so, yeah, I mean, if there's anyone out there who will understand what it is to play like against a Mike Zimmer defense, it's going to be a guy who went against it for an entire training camp in 2021.
And then obviously he can flip that too. If there's anyone that's going to understand Clint Kubiak's offense, it's going to be Zim.
Why'd you have to do that?
I know. I'm just saying.
All right. Chris P asks what we think about Trevor Penning. And this is where we can kind of end. I think that Trevor has done enough to continue being your right tackle. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but when you consider where we were after the game against the Cardinals, where yeah. everyone was already ready to kick him to the curb, I think why is he still on the roster? He deserves praise for that. He really does. And, you know, like, I don't think Trevor is a social media guy. I don't think he's necessarily reading the tweets and paying attention to all the grief that he's been getting, but he knows that there's frustration and he understands. Like, I give John Benton a lot of credit, and I'm hopeful I get to talk to John this week. I was supposed to talk to him last week, but the schedules didn't work out. I think he's done an excellent job with this offensive line. And, you know, you watch some of these other games, and we made a big deal about how the Saints offensive line was a weak point and they could be the reason that things are terrible and whatever. You will go around and watch some of the highlights from other games across the NFL. Watch the Ravens and their offensive line getting trucked. The Falcons got eaten alive by TJ Watt and the Steelers. Like, the Bears, Caleb Williams was running for his life. The Commanders, Jaden Daniels was running for his life. Like, there's a lot of bad offensive line play in the NFL. And I didn't watch this. I didn't watch a team in the Saints yesterday and feel like this is a bad offensive line group. I felt like, hey, there's growth that has to occur. But I think they're headed in the right direction. And I think they have some really, really strong pieces in Eric McCoy and Cesar Ruiz. I think that Taliese Fuaga has a chance to be really, really good. He'll go through some rookie growing pains. He will. It's inevitable. And if Trevor can be a starting caliber tackle, I think you're in good shape. And then the question becomes, okay, left guard, Lucas Patrick started that game, went out with a toe injury. Landon Young actually took over. I'd be hopeful that if Lucas can't go this week, you would get Nick Saldivari in there. He was the emergency eighth offensive lineman, still working back from that calf injury. I just think they weren't comfortable putting him in there yet if they didn't have to. But I would expect him to be the starter if he's healthy. But no, I mean, 1 week in, again, the first hurdle was not particularly high off the ground, but you can still trip over it if you're not if you can't jump high enough. And they got over it. Now, Micah Parsons is a much higher hurdle.
And pretty big.
Can you deal with that? We'll see. But I can't say I'm upset about what I saw from the offensive line.
No, and what my favorite texter from last night on the postgame show on WWL, it says, I'm not getting too hyped over a week one victory over the Panthers, but fellas, we're going to the fucking Super Bowl.
I don't want to get too far over my skis here, but I am currently snowballing down a hill and causing an avalanche, just to be clear. No, I'm excited. You know, it's nice to be back in a rational optimism land where which is where you should be in the first couple weeks of an NFL season before
you felt good to be home.
Before you've been knocked down to reality yet.
You felt the home field advantage yesterday was nice. Obviously, everyone worried about, we hear from, you know, the secondary market of tickets, and they're so low to get into this game. And I just felt the energy was there. Obviously, the team performance early on and being able to keep the foot on the throat, so to speak, and kept running with it all over the Panthers' help. But man, oh man, there were those who dat chants breaking out, and you're like, man, it didn't feel like a reality I had been a part in a while.
Yeah, no, and those tickets aren't going to be cheap for very long if they keep winning games the way.
No, especially with Philly coming to town, I guarantee there's not going to be $11 tickets for that.
Yeah, I have a feeling. Yeah, you're going to have to break out the checkbook a little bit more extensively for those Eagles tickets. But all right, can't wait, can't wait. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. All right, I think we've done it. I think we have. You feel good? You feel like we did enough?
Clint Kubiak for president. I feel great.
Yeah, the Cubs.
The Cubs.
The New Orleans Cubs. All right. Who dat? Go Saints. Thanks, everyone, for hanging out again. Thanks, everyone, who dropped in a comment. This was a lot of fun. Hopefully, we can continue to have more fun. You know, football's supposed to be fun. Football's supposed to be fun. I'm going to say it again. Football's supposed to be fun. And right now, it's fun. So, hopefully, we can keep that going. Steve, how you feeling? Feeling good?
We're on to Dallas.
On to Dallas. On to Dallas. Who dat? I'll be back here on Wednesday, give you a breakdown of the initial injury report. Hopefully, there's not a hurricane, you know, attacking us as that happens. I'll keep an eye out. Looks good right now. But we'll be back. Thanks, everyone. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do that. You can follow me on Twitter at Jeff_Nowak. DMs are open. Let me know what you think. Let me know if you want to hear anything specific. We'll try to get into as much as you want. At Steve Geller, WWL is that guy. You can follow the show at Saints_pod. Check out the latest news, notes, and analysis at WWL.com. Dennis Allen is on WWL today. Is that correct? Did I make that up?
DA and special teams coordinator Darren Rizzi.
And special teams coordinator Darren Rizzi. He'll be chatting with Mike Tillier and Bobby Hebert. So tune in for
and hold. That.
I know I will. And as always, who dat? Go Saints. Easy, y'all.
1-0.